Real Estate Money and More Podcast, Episode 2.
You finally found it. Welcome to the show that helps thousands with real estate, money, and a whole lot more. Now here is our host, Shane Willis.
Well, hello, and welcome to Real Estate, Money, and a Whole Lot More. My name's Shane Willis, and this is the podcast for investors and entrepreneurs to get ideas and tips that can help them succeed financially and in life. It is my sincere hope that we can be a small part in helping you get to the next level. Thanks for coming to our second podcast. For those of you who heard the first one, thanks for coming back. And for those of you who are listening to the first time, well, I wish I could say that was a sound effect and it was planned, but I can't. I'm not quite sure what that was. Okay. Beauty of live. Yes, I guess I could edit that out before we put it live, but why not? This is a real show for real folks, and something just fell somewhere, and I'm not quite sure what it was. I guess we'll figure it out afterwards. This particular show, we're going to talk about sellers, people selling their homes. What type of mistakes do I see all the time in the marketplace? And really kind of one of the things that I advise my clients to do. I had wrote a free report, and it was the six mistakes homeowners make with selling their homes and how you can use them to your favor. There's really two parts to a real estate negotiation. One of them is price, one of them is terms. And when we're negotiating the price, there's a lot of things that sellers do that that hurts them. I think if you take these six steps that we're going to talk about here in today's show, I know that as a seller, you can get more money out of your property. I'm just that convinced. I know it. As a matter of fact, these are some of the steps that I tell my clients they must do in order to qualify for my 59-day guarantee sold program. I have a program out there to where I guarantee you an offer in 59 days as long as you follow all the steps. So this is kind of a little insight behind one of the things that I do when I'm looking at helping folks list, helping folks sell their homes, and hopefully you can get a little bit out of it. I get the phone call all the time. Here's the phone call. Listen, my property's not selling, Shane. I see two other properties in the neighborhood. They just went under contract, but mine's not. It's been on the market for a year. It's been on the market for 6 months, and we're not getting any activity. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Obviously, I've done something wrong. Can you help? I had this conversation just 5 weeks ago. A lady had a property on the market with a different person for a year, 365 days, literally. And she contacted me. I had heard some of my other speeches, some other speaking arrangements, engagements, I think is the word I'm looking for, not arrangements, speaking engagements, and had contacted me because she had a house here in my area that she wanted to sell. And she was now in California. Now, I'm in Northwest Florida, so that's a long ways. We're 3,000 miles away, and it's been on the market for over a year. So she asked me, she said, what's going on? Obviously, my first question is, well, what's different? What's different about the house? Is there repairs that need to be done? What's wrong with it? Which is the exact thought that all the buyers looking at her house is saying too. What's wrong with the property? It doesn't sit there for 365 days if something's not wrong with it. Now, she asked that to her current agent, and the current agent said, well, it might be slightly higher price than needs to be. The dog door doesn't work in the back porch section of the right back hand that nobody ever sees section of the house. That might need to be fixed, and well, there could be a few small things that need to be done, but there was no real game plan. This agent had no game plan for this flan. That's me talking today. Hang on. Okay, maybe that'll help. It's a game plan for this property to sell. They didn't even know what it looked like, to be honest. I asked them more questions. And I found out that this seller had made one of my six deadly mistakes right off the bat. I don't ever talk down about another real estate agent. Never will. You'll never hear me talking bad about another agent. I just don't believe in that. There's no sense in it. And I didn't want to know who it was, although I did, because I saw it on the MLS. When I was first contacted about it, I saw it on the MLS as an active, and I even told the seller that I could not have much of a conversation with her because she was already under contract with another person, and that would be a violation of ethics, that she needed to talk to her. Well, she did talk to her, ask some questions, and when she came back with these answers, the contract with that other agent had expired and the property had expired off the market. So now I felt ethically okay having the conversation. When I asked her, I said, well, how did you interview the agent? Here's mistake one, number one. Ready? I want you to write this down. Mistake number one sellers make when selling their home, and it's a deadly one: choosing their friend or relative as their realtor, based solely on that fact. Let me say that again. Based solely on the fact that your realtor is a friend or a relative, you list with them. Now, I do sell property for some of my family. I do sell property for a lot of my friends. A lot of my clients become friends, but they also know that I'm a professional and I do this for a living. This is what I do. And without sounding too cocky, I'm good at it. I know what I'm doing. I know how to get this done. But there are some people that use just that. And let me give you a statistic. In the state of Florida, you know what it takes to be trained as a real estate license agent? 63 hours. It takes 63 hours worth of training to become a real estate agent in the state of Florida. Then you have to pass, obviously you have to pass your background check, so let me clarify that. And then you have to pass the state exam. That's it. At that point, you are licensed to handle the transaction that for most people is the largest transaction they'll make in their lifetime. This is the largest asset they will handle in their lifetime, and you got 63 hours worth of training in you, so you're qualified to take it. Now, let me put that in contrast. Ready? Same state here in Florida. You know how many hours of training it takes to get a cosmetology license to work on someone's hair? To cut their hair? 1,200. 1,200. That's over 19 times the amount of training to cut someone's hair that it takes to be able to handle their real estate. Am I the only one that sees a problem with that? that's not equality. That's not the right amount of training in my mind. We have, in our office, we have an apprentice program. So if someone comes into our office and we expect them to get a license at the beginning of the apprentice program, but they're not allowed to really sell, work with a buyer or a seller alone for over a year's worth of training with a mentor. I have an apprentice now, just got her license yesterday. She's all excited. She said, I was talking to someone the other day and I have an appointment set up. They want to sell their house and they're friends of mine. And I told her, I said, okay, that's fine. When are we going? Well, they don't want to meet with you. They want to meet with just with me. They want me to sell it. It doesn't work that way. But unfortunately, most people do not have that mentor trainee or an apprentice mentality. Most agencies don't. There are a lot of brokerages out there that'll take that brand new licensed person. Come on in. We'll throw you in the training program. But day one, you're in the training program, you bump into a friend of yours who's talking about selling their house and go, hey, I just got my license and you're wanting to get active. So you go out and list it. But are you doing them a service? So that's a mistake that a lot of sellers make. They hire just their friend and family based on just that fact. Now, I have to lay ground rules when I do real estate for friends or family. I let them know, listen, Thanksgiving's one thing, but if you want me to help you with the transaction of this business, this property, this piece of real estate, we have to understand the ground rules. I will tell you what you need to hear. And just because we have Thanksgiving together doesn't mean I'm going to tell you always what you want to hear. I might tell you what you want to hear on Thanksgiving dinner, past the turkey. That's all I'm going to say. But when it comes to this transaction, I'm going to tell you what you need to hear. We're not going to overprice it. We're not going to make sure that it's not clean. We're not. These are some other things that we're going to talk about in a minute. But you have to have those ground rules in place. And it's sometimes it's tough to do that with friends or family, because those tough conversations don't happen. Those honest conversations don't happen. To go back to my story earlier, the lady who had it listed for a year with someone else came to me and said, "What do we have to do to get this sold? I need to get this sold." And when I sat down, I looked at it and I said, "You're overpriced. Period. You're just overpriced." Well, the other agent said that I was fine. The comparables in the area were fine. I said, "Yeah, your comparables in the area are great. The problem is, you've got less square foot. You've got a smaller house." So they wasn't pricing it per square foot, which is a rookie mistake. They were pricing it based off of just, "Hey, this neighborhood sells at X dollar amount, so let's list it there." I said, "You're about $20,000 too high. And that's for you to be right at market. Right at market value." So in other words, you're only capturing about 10% of the eyeballs that are looking at property right now. That's it. Because you're $20,000 too high. Or in this case, about 15% too high. That was a tough conversation. She didn't like me for that. She said, "Well, I don't think you're right," and hung up. And 2 days later called back and said, "I guess you're right." But that leads me into mistake number two. And it was one that we couldn't overcome in that transaction, but it's one that I teach every one of my clients, and anybody that enrolls in my 59-day program must understand this. Mistake number two is overpricing the house and then lowering it. "Well, Bob down the street got X dollar amount, and so I know my house is better than his, and I want it a little higher." Well, that doesn't work that way. "Well, Sally doesn't have a 3-car garage. She's only got a 2, so my 3rd car garage should be worth another $400,000. It doesn't work that way. "Well, let's put it on the market there, and if it doesn't work that way, then we'll just drop it." Now, how many people have heard that? That is a mistake, and it is a deadly one. I always use the analogy in real estate. When you put your house on the market, it's like a movie premiere. You notice how your blockbuster movies have a good run over that weekend. They've got weekend, opening weekend. That's where they make most of their money. Now, it runs that next week, and you might even have another second good weekend. But after about the third, we as the public, we're bored. We're bored with it. We want to see where the next one is. Real estate works the same way. So when you start talking about pricing, all the excitement of a property when it first comes on the market happens in the first 20 to 25 days. And I could even argue that it happens in the first 14. But I try and give it 3 weeks. But all the excitement happens in the first 2 to 3 weeks. That's it. After that, it's not exciting anymore. You're boring. We can't make any money off of Blockbuster Weekend. So you've got to price it right out of the gate. Because if you don't, then the stagnation of the property being on the market longer and longer and longer will affect the negotiation when we do eventually get an offer. So for instance, if a property is really worth $190,000, but we got the 3-car garage, so we want to list it at $200,000. We're not going to get the views that we would get even if we put it at market value of $190,000. But then when we drop it to $190,000, we've been on the market for 90 days. So the question starts to be asked by the potential buyers, what's wrong with the property? Why didn't it get grabbed up as soon as it came on the market? Because valuable property that's priced right is going to get grabbed. If you price your property at market or slightly below market, you'll get an offer. So timing is really, really everything. And I say that that second mistake of overpricing a property, it's deadly and it can kill us. I go over in my report how if we put it on at fair market value, you're only going to get 50% of today's buyers. That's it. Just 50%. And if you put it 10% over value, you're only going to get 30%. And if you put it 15% or higher, you're only going to get 10%. And people think that somebody's going to come around with just a checkbook and not do any inspections and not do an appraisal and just write them a check. It doesn't work that way. Even the people that can afford to write the check, why would they overpay for it? Now, I know you've got sentimental value in this property. And that diving board means a lot. But it doesn't to the new buyer. Remember those tough conversations we were trying to have? It doesn't matter to the new buyer. So you need to make sure that you price the property correctly coming out of the gate. Now, in order to be in my 59-day program, I want you priced 10% under market. And then we're going to lower it to 15% under market within the 59 days. Because I know that if I'm 15% under the market value, 90% of potential buyers, they'll look at the property. It'll start with just 70%, but then I'm up to 90%. And I can guarantee that we're going to get an offer at that point. All right, sorry about that soapbox there, but pricing's a really, really big thing for me. And it's a conversation that I have to have every day. Every day with pretty much every seller. There are some sellers that understand it and don't ask a whole lot of questions about it, which I kind of discourage. I want people to ask questions. But now you understand my thought process behind it, and I think you can implement that in your negotiations when you go to sell a property. The third mistake, no pre-list inspection. Oh, that's a big one. There's a lot of people that look at me funny, and that kind of separates me a little bit because a lot of sellers don't want to pay for an inspection. But statistics have shown that what you could have fixed from a pre-list inspection, pre-list inspection for a dollar, will cost you $3 to $4 if the buyers pay for the inspection. It's kind of like playing poker. A pre-list inspection is like playing poker with your buyer, but getting a chance to take a sneak peek at your opponent's hand before you bid. One of the biggest negotiating points for a buyer is the home inspection. They want that third party, independent, doesn't care about the diving board, doesn't care about the sentimental value of the third car garage that holds the ATV that we've had some great times on. Doesn't care about all that. They want that independent person to come in and check the structure, check the outlets. They want to give it a good once-over look. So if that's their biggest negotiating point, if that's how they're going to bet their hand is off of that inspection report, why wouldn't you spend a couple hundred dollars to get one yourself? It's only a few hundred dollars. It's not much. But I can send an inspector out who's done an inspection, gives me a good list, and then me and the seller can sit back down. We don't necessarily have to fix everything. There are some things we might not fix. But the major stuff, yeah. I just got finished with that this morning before this recording. I was sitting down with my seller. We found a couple of fogged windows, which we knew were going to be there, but we got it on the report. There's a couple of leaking faucets that we're going to get fixed, and there's some condensation under the air conditioning unit. So we need to get that cleaned out and resealed up. Then there's some other minor stuff staying on the carpet. They're not fixing that. But if you as a seller can get that pre-list inspection done and then offer that to the buyers before they even make their offer, showing them, hey, we've already done the inspection. You don't have to worry about it. Here's what the inspector found, and this is what we did. here's the pictures of it done, or here's the receipts where we paid whoever to do it. So it's already done. We've had the home inspection done. We don't even need to play poker. Don't beat me up for a home inspection on our negotiations because I've already done one. I've already preempted everything. If they like the house, here you go. You know exactly what you're getting, and we can negotiate in real good faith. Now, not to say that people that don't have a pre-list inspection are negotiating out of good faith or in bad faith. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that if it cost me $4.50 to fix something found in a home inspection that a buyer did because I have to do it quickly, or I could do it on my terms and only pay a dollar for it, that saved me money. All right, so that's mistake number three, not getting the pre-list inspection. Go get a pre-list inspection. It's not that much, and it gives you the buyer's hands. You can see what they're going to negotiate off of. All right, mistake number four, falling for the bait and switch. Oh my goodness, do I see this all the time. What is your goal as a seller of a home? Well, it's real simple. I want to get as much money as possible. I get that. I understand that. I think every seller has that same goal. Maybe not in that same accent that I just did, but they do have that same goal. So that makes you susceptible to the bait and switch tactic, which is utilized by a lot of agents. So you sit down with three different agents. They tell you, let's say agent one comes in and says, the property's worth $180,000. That's what I want to list it at. I come in, tell you, I think the property's worth about $182,000. If you want to put it on the 59-day guarantee program, we're going to list it at $170,000. Or we can put it on the market at $182,000. I'm just not going to guarantee the offer. Because I really do think it's $182,000. It's not just based off of past solds, but the way the market's going right now. And then the third agent comes in and says, this property is worth $219,000. And I want to list it based off of that. Most sellers are going to go with option three. Why? Because it's going to give them $40,000 more. So they think. But in order to get that listing agent at $219,000, we want you to sign an 18-month listing agreement. 18 months. 18-month listing agreement at $219,000. Remember, it only takes 63 hours worth of training for a real estate agent to come in. So it doesn't take a whole lot. The ease of entrance into this business is scary. Now, that's in here in Florida, and Florida is one of the bigger states. There are other states out there that have less hours. What you've just done, or what that agent, that last agent that came in and got you to sign that 18-month listing agreement, they just bought the listing. They came in and bought the listing by giving you information. They didn't pay you anything for it, but they dangled the carrot saying, I think it's worth $219,000. Now, if you've got two other agents that got you in the 180s and somebody comes in at $219,000, I'm going to raise a red flag immediately. I've seen some of these bought, quote unquote, bought listings with terms as long as 2 years. A 2-year listing term. I would never sign a 2-year listing term. Are you kidding me? The longest term I have ever signed is 12 months. And I don't like doing that. But sometimes in some of your resort areas, 12 months gives you all the cycles. Some of these condos that I work with here, if you go through the summer, you might not ever be able to get in because it's weekly rentals and the tenants won't let you in. So it might be, hey, we can't do 60 days or 90 days because we can't even get in to see it. Okay, I can justify that, but 2 years? Shut up. You don't get 2 years. So after several weeks being on the market with no activity, guess what? That 219 agent's going to be calling you. Listen, we may have been a little aggressive on our pricing. So if we're aggressive on our pricing, I think what we need to do is drop the price. Maybe to 200. Now, I know immediately some people would say, well, Shane, that's still $20,000 more than what you said. Oh, I get it. But remember, we've also broken other rules now. Now we've been on the market for 4 months, 120 days, which means we've lost our blockbuster weekend. We've lost that whole time frame. People are starting to wonder why. And we're still too high. Still too high. So we're still overpriced. So we're going to go another 4 months being overpriced. Now we've been on the market for 8 months, and you might get the phone call back going, maybe we should list it at 185. When we come down to the 185 mark, which might be where the property is at value-wise now, because I had said it was 182 6 months ago. If we're continuing in today's market, it very well could be 185. So now we come in at 185, but you've been on the market 6 months, which the buyers are going to use to their advantage to negotiate a lower price. You've just been on the market, especially if it's been sitting vacant and you've been having to write the checks for the mortgage. Now you've lost money. Even if you sold it at 185, you lost money. Because if I'd have come in and sold it at 182 6 months ago, you would have had less outlay. So overpricing something and then bringing it down is not a good idea. But that's not the only way that somebody can come in and buy a listing. It's not just price. What do they come in at? Well, I can do this for 2% commission. I can do this for $500. I can do this for $1,000. You don't need to pay full price. We can do it for 2.5%. Okay. Selling a property is usually one of the largest transactions you'll complete. Do you really want someone who's willing to negotiate away their livelihood, their money, very quickly with you? Do you really want that person negotiating for you? And how much do you believe you'll get if you pay 2%, 1%, $500? What do you believe that's getting you? Access to the MLS? Maybe. Is it any marketing? Probably not. Now, I don't know all the programs, and there's new programs popping up every day. It happens. But do you think that discounting their livelihood is also going to help you get your property sold at the highest price with the lowest time frame? Probably not. One of the other things you want to ask questions on is, when you're talking about a commission with someone, with one of the agents, how do they split that? See, some people don't know how real estate works. Most of the time, if I get a 6% commission from the sellers to help market and sell their property, I will offer a buyer's agent 3. I split it evenly. I get 6. Out of my 6, 3% goes to the buyer's agent that brings me a buyer, and I get 3% for marketing and representing the seller. Now, if I bring the buyer, then I get both sides of that. But I offer 3% to the buyer. And one of the reasons that my team and I sell a lot of real estate around here is because we're one of the few that only split evenly. I've seen people here take listings from a seller and ask for 7% commission. And that's okay. I've done 7% commission. I've done 10% commissions if I know it's a difficult property. And that's standard in commercial. Take a 7% commission, but then offer the buyer's agent 2%. Here's your 2% for bringing me a buyer. Really? Now let me tell you how that works. It shouldn't work this way, but it does. You have a buyer's agent that's going up and down properties in this neighborhood. There's 4 properties for sale. There's 2 properties that are offering 2.5% commission at about the same price. There's 1 property about the same price. It's offering 3% commission. And then there's yours about the same price, because the price is right on the property, that's offering 2% commission. Which property do you think the buyer's agent's going to suggest is better? Should it work that way? No. Does it? Yeah. A lot of times. To me, the 0.5% doesn't really matter. I'm gonna do what's best for my clients, period. But it works that way all the time. I've seen it work that way. So don't just think that selling the listing or a listing agent coming in to buy the listing, if you will, means that they're going to raise the price. No, sometimes they buy it by taking a lower commission, but want that length of time. And think about what the standard market is in your marketplace. Because the buyer's agents are affected by that. Is their livelihood. And if there are two houses that are identical, and one's going to pay them $1,000 more or $1,500 more or $2,000, $4,000 more, who do you think they're going to push? All right, mistake number five, discounting the first offer too quickly. Discounting that first offer quickly. There are a lot of studies that point to the fact, unless you're in a rapidly appreciating market, i.e. 2005, the first offer you get on the home is usually your highest. Usually. It doesn't always work that way, but usually that happens. And I'm not going to talk a lot about this, but the conversations that I have with my sellers are, we have an offer. I know it's only been on the market 3 days, but that's what you hired me to do. You hired me to bring us an offer. Now, some of them are crazy. I get offers all the time. I'll list something for $180,000 and I'll get an offer in the mail, in my email box. We'll offer you $25,000. No. So I should probably change that to the first serious offer. Take seriously. But don't discount it. And just because that offer came in quickly doesn't mean that you underpriced the property. It means that we did our job. That we collaborated and we did our job. Finally, mistake number six, pricing your home based on yesterday's numbers alone. Alone. We call in the market, in the real estate market, we call it a comparative market analysis or a CMA. It's when realtors look through the neighborhood, try and find a price per square foot of the last 3 to 6 solds. We're basically matching what an appraiser does. And then I actually take it even a step further and we look at the actives because I want to look at what's active out there too. We base everything off here's what's sold, here's what's active. We need to base the sales price based off of those solds only. And that's how a lot of realtors are trained. And don't get me wrong, there's value in the comparative market analysis. You should do a comparative market analysis on your property. That should be done. But that should not be the only thing that determines the value. That should just be the starting point. And that's where a lot of realtors base the value of the home on, period. They just stop. We can't see into the future, but you need to have some sense of where the market's going. If we are seeing an appreciation of 1%, 2%, 10%, and when I say appreciation, this works when we're seeing a depreciation as well. We need to factor that in. If the last sold was 3 months ago, and we're seeing about a 6% appreciation a year, that means that about 1.5% higher is the true market value right now. So it is slightly higher than what that last sold is, as long as you understand the numbers. And the numbers are hyper-local. You can't go off the National Association of Realtors numbers. Here, you can't even go off the Florida Association of Realtors numbers. I talk with a lot of asset managers because I deal in real estate-owned, bank-owned assets. And they tell me, well, we think we need to price this a little higher because you're in Florida. And I just chuckle and go, seriously? Because I'm in Florida? What's happening in Miami, which is 13 hours away from me, is not affecting my real estate market. It's drastically different. What's happening in Tampa, which is 7.5, well, probably 8 hours. I've just got a little heavier foot. Drive away from me. That's not affecting what's happening here. So it's hyper, hyper local. You need an agent that knows and understands your hyper local market. So when you're evaluating the value of your property, make sure you take into consideration where the market is going. So that's going to take it the end of this show. I hope you picked up a few things. And now that you know these six disastrous mistakes, I charge you to make sure that you don't make them when selling your property. If you want to get a free copy of that report that I talked about in the show, go to the website, realestatemoneyandmore.com/6deadly mistakes. That's all spelled out, and it's kind of like one word. So, 6 deadly mistakes. No dashes between it or anything like that. realestatemoneyandmore.com/6deadly mistakes. Thank you so much for listening this week, and we'll talk to you soon.